Okay, so here's the deal. We're continuing our series called Repurposed, and today what I want to talk about is questions. I want to talk about questions. Now, as I thought about this, and this past week, it kind of took me back to my childhood. My mom, when I was a kid, would constantly refer to me as Curious George. Yeah, that's right, Curious George. I was so curious. I mean, I would ask so many questions. You know, I was adopted when I was a baby. I'm surprised my parents didn't actually put me back up for adoption because I asked so many questions, right? How many of you as parents or maybe grandparents, you're at a place in life where you've got kids or grandkids and they are at that place where they're asking a gazillion questions? How many of you are in that place? Yeah, I do too. I'm there with you. But, you know, kids ask a lot of questions, and sometimes they ask too many questions and all of that, but they ask good questions, don't they? Reminds me of a story I heard not long ago about this four-year-old boy. He was at a restaurant with his dad one day, and, you know, they're sitting there having their breakfast or their lunch, and all of a sudden, the little boy becomes totally engrossed and just begins staring because right over, like, near them at this other table was this man and this woman totally making out. Kissing, hugging, and the boy was like, and he just sat there and stared, and without even taking his eyes off this couple, he kind of leans over to his dad and he goes, "Dad, why is he whispering in her mouth?" And so I said to my son, no, I'm just kidding. But no, listen, kids ask some great questions, don't they? And see, ultimately, that's a very good thing. Because see, questions are not just sentences with question marks at the end. No, questions are powerful. I mean, if you think about it, what questions do is questions, they take us on a journey, don't they? Questions lead us onto a path of discovery, right? They point us into new ways of thinking, new ways of understanding this world, new ways of even understanding ourselves. I mean, if you think about it, if you look at it, I mean, so many great inventions that started with a question, with some sort of curiosity, right? I think about Thomas Edison, one of the greatest inventors of all time. It was said that Thomas Edison constantly asked one question in particular that was this one right here. "I wonder what would happen if." Wonder what would happen if. See, questions are very powerful. Because the thing is, the right kind of questions, okay, good questions, the right kind of questions have the ability to ignite hope within us. The right kind of questions have the ability to move us into places that we would never otherwise imagine in our lives. Well, unfortunately, because questions are so powerful, well, when you ask the wrong kind of questions, those wrong questions can actually cause us to lose hope. And they can cause us to become, extremely stuck in our lives. Listen, don't discount the power of questions. See, I think this is part of the reason Jesus constantly asked questions. Right? Sometimes we like to think of Jesus as being Mr. Answer Man, and of course Jesus did give, you know, provided answers, but Jesus sure asked a lot of questions, right? I mean, like any great teacher, any great rabbi, Jesus seemed to have a question, I mean, essentially for everyone, right? I mean, he asked Peter, "Who do you say I am?" Right? His mom and dad are looking for him. He says to his parents, "Why are you looking for me?" Right? I mean, constantly asking questions. He asked Judas, like, why have you come here? Why do you think Jesus asked so many questions? I mean, don't you think it would have been easier for Jesus just to walk around and give facts and answers, right? Be black and white, linear about everything, and just give easy answers? I mean, I think it would have been a lot easier. But see, I think Jesus understood the power of questions. Listen, Jesus understood that there's something about questions that sends you off on a journey into discovery of better ways of seeing the world, better ways of seeing yourself, and ultimately better ways of living, period. And see, that's exactly what good questions do for us in our lives. They do the exact same thing. And look, you probably heard me say before, and this isn't rocket science, I mean, so don't be too let down here, but you know, you've heard the saying, if you want what you've never had, you've got to do what you've never done, right? I mean, if you're doing the same thing over and over again, but you're expecting something to be different, that's actually called insanity, right? Right, doing the same thing over and over again, and well, why isn't it changing, right? Well, I think the same is true for questions. If you want answers you've never had before, you better start asking questions you've never asked before. You better start asking better questions. And see, here's the thing. We all know this too. Our ego hates better questions. Oh, it hates it. Our ego hates better questions because, well, for one, our ego likes to be in control, right? Our ego likes to have guarantees. And that's why it's going to almost always be our default posture to go with the safer options, right? I mean, it's almost always easier to choose the safer way, which unfortunately does what? Well, it's where most of us, we spend our time there. And as a result, most of us, many of us anyway, end up living ineffective lives. So we've got to ask, I think, better questions. And so what I want to do today is I want to give you a handful of questions. And these are very specific questions. In fact, if you have a pen, you might want to write these down. If you don't have a pen, well, you're screwed. No, I'm just kidding. You're not. But you can use your phone, and you can take pictures of the screen if you want or whatever, okay? But anyway, but what I want to do is I want to give you a handful of very specific questions that I think if we can be intentional about repurposing these types of questions, man, it's going to help us a great deal. I'm going to tell you, these are questions that have helped me a ton in my life. Now, a couple of these are going to sound familiar because I've talked about them before, But I've been waiting for a time that I can really dive into some of these. So we're going to dive a little bit deeper into these today because these are the kind of questions that I think if we can repurpose these, man, it's going to make it a lot easier to repurpose a lot of the other areas of our lives. All right, so let's dive into this. All right, this first question. The first question is one that pops up anytime you are thinking about trying something new. Maybe there's something you've been passionate about for a long time, and you're thinking about taking a step of faith in your life. Maybe there's a new business opportunity. Maybe there's this opportunity to help someone in need that you found out about, and your heart, you just know, like, man, I need to help them. Or maybe it's in your job. You're asked to take on a new project that just kind of came out of the blue. You're asked to partner with someone or whatever it might be. And so what happens is, for many of us, we start to process it, we start to think about it, and we almost always immediately first go to that place and to all the reasons why we can't do it, right? We go immediately to why we don't think we'll be able to do it, right? We look at our financial situation, we look at our resources or often lack of resources. We look at our talents and what other people's talents are, and we look at our abilities compared to other people's abilities, and we end up getting sidetracked by asking this question right here. What do I lack? And we get so honed in. What's missing? Okay, what don't I have that I believe if I had, then I could actually do it, or I would actually feel better about even trying. What's missing? See, those are all questions that we justify, and we think, well, this is wisdom, right? No, these are questions, whatever you want to call them, that usually end up taking us where? Taking us the safe route. The route often that just ends up getting us stuck right where we are. I love the story that Adam shared last weekend, not about being mugged. Hey, by the way, great talk, Adam. It's good stuff. Wasn't that a good talk last weekend, self-image? But I loved how Adam shared that story about Moses. You guys remember that? And if you know the story, you know, Moses, you know, it's kind of minding his own business. And then God shows up one day and is like, hey, Moses, I want you to do some things. And Moses is completely overwhelmed by it. Right? And so what does he do? He starts going down the list. Why? I can't do this. Why? I'm not the right person, right? Comes up with every reason in the book. Aren't you glad you never do that? Right? Well, anyway, so there's this one moment where he's just kind of going down his list, and God kind of stops him. And he poses a question to Moses, and the question is this. Moses, Moses, what's in your hand right now? What's in your hand right now? See, God wasn't all that concerned about what Moses was lacking. Right? All God really cared about was what Moses was able to do and could do right where he was at in that place, at that time, in that moment. That was God's concern. God wasn't saying, hey, let me discover all your deficits so that I can even myself be discouraged about calling you. Right? No, listen. I mean, so here's the thing. Imagine this question that we get so honed in on. What do I lack? Imagine what it would look like to repurpose that question and to reframe it and to ask it this way. Ready? It's this. What do I have? Instead of what do I lack, what do I have? Can we ask that out loud right now? Ready? What do I have? Let me tell you what I'm starting to understand in my own life. All right, I'm starting to learn that more often than not, I already have everything I need in front of me to take the next step. I already have it. Most of the time, I may not have what it takes to take 10 steps, but almost always, I already have what it takes to take at least a step. But see, we miss it because we're so often focused on what we don't have that we miss what's right in front of us, right? Listen, don't discount what you do have. Don't discount your relationships. Don't discount your story. Don't discount your voice. Don't discount your uniqueness. So this is a good question for us to reframe, right? This is a big one. Instead of what do I lack, we start to ask, what do I have? Now, let me go to the next one, all right? This next one, instead of asking, what can't I do? This is a big one. What can't I do? We ask this one, what can I do? Ask that with me, ready? What can I? What can I do? I remember feeling so overwhelmed a couple years ago on a trip that I went on to Africa. And, you know, we spent about a week there, and we were hanging out in the poorest, poverty, you know, you think you've seen it, and then you go there, and you just go, oh my gosh, this is unbelievable. And I remember, though, after being there a week, walking away, and I remember the last day, we're driving, going to the airport, and I remember we were in Uganda, and feeling so overwhelmed, and I had that feeling. And if you've ever been to Africa, even any third world country, you'll know that like you can feel very overwhelmed by it. I mean, I remember walking away almost having this sense of hopelessness. Like, what can I possibly do? You know, you hear about what's going on in the government, you hear about what's going on, all the corruption, and it's overwhelming. And it wasn't really until I changed my question that I started having a better perspective. Because here's what happens. Okay, this question of, and we don't always say it this way, it's kind of an odd way to say it, but this idea of what can't I do, that's a question that, you know what it does? It convinces us that we can't do anything then. Right? It's like all or nothing thinking. If I can't solve all of the problem, then I guess I can't do anything to help. Right? It points us to what's impossible. But then that second question, what can I do? What does that do? Well, I'll tell you what, it opens you up and it causes you to think like this. All right, well, what if I could do for one what I wish I could do for everybody? I mean, what if I could do for one person what I know, unfortunately, I can't possibly do for everybody. Right? Well, what if you could do just for one? Right? I mean, so suddenly, see, you start to think, all right, well, I might not be able to solve world hunger, but I can provide a meal for someone. Right? I may not be able to help all the children in Uganda who are living in poverty, but you know what? Maybe I could sponsor one or two or three and help them. Right? I might not be able to start this organization that I'm dreaming about, but you know what? Maybe I can help someone else start theirs. See, so what is it for you? I mean, if you were to take that phrase, for example, okay, I might not be able to blank, but I could do blank, what would it be for you? If you were to really think about that, right? I might not be able to, where would that fit well in your life right now? Right? I might not be able to, I don't know, publish a book, but I could start a blog. Right? I might not be able to, what? I don't know. I might not be able to take my wife on a trip to Hawaii this year, but I could take her on a date. Imagine that. And all the ladies said, amen, Pastor. I'm gonna get this CD for my husband. Put that in his car when I get home, right at that exact spot. I might not be able to blank, but I can blank, right? I might not be able to quit my job and pursue this dream at this point in my life, but what could I do? Now, listen to me. Don't be afraid to start small. Don't be afraid to start small. Small does not equal insignificant. See, we live in a culture where we are trained to believe that we've got to blow everything up real huge. It's got to be big, right? I mean, pastor, some of you who are listening online right now, you're thinking, man, I want a big church. You don't even know what you're asking for, right? You want more people. You know what more people means? More people means more headaches. Listen, we usually wouldn't even be able to handle big if we don't start out small first, because it's when we start out small, we're able to learn, right? We learn from our mistakes, right? I mean, some of us, we want more, but we're not doing too good of a job handling the little bit that we do have now. So we reframe this question, what can't I do? We start asking, what can I do? All right, let me go to the next one, all right? This one is one that we are faced with at any point in our lives when we are considering taking a risk or a step of faith, and that is this question. This becomes so real to us in those moments. Here it is. What could I lose? What could I lose? Now, you know this as well as I do. Anytime that you are faced with any sort of great opportunity or significant opportunity in your life, anytime you're faced with that, there is always going to be the possibility of failure, right? There's always going to be the possibility of failure, of defeat, of loss. There's always going to be risk. If it's something great, if it's something big, there's always going to be some kind of risk. And here's the crazy thing. For whatever reason, our potential loss always feels much greater and much more real to us than whatever that potential gain could be. Isn't that true? Those things that we're afraid of losing are much more real and tangible. See, which is all the more reason to ask this question, because this question helps us to move beyond where we currently are. You know, I love the story of David and Goliath. Man, what a great story. And if you know the story, David shows up at the battlefield and all the soldiers are standing around, you know, essentially freaked out about this giant named Goliath. Right? And David, like, he just doesn't know any better, right? So he just kind of walks up and he's like, hey, what's going on? And one of the soldiers standing there says, hey, well, okay, so there's this guy, Goliath, and, you know, we're all kind of nervous about him. But the king is actually offering a pretty sweet deal for whoever takes him out. David said, tell me about that deal. Right? I mean, read the story, all right, sometime. All right, so the soldier says, look, all right, so here's the deal. The king says that whoever takes the giant out, takes Goliath out, the king will make him rich. Okay, I can picture that. The king will, number two, the king will give him his daughter in marriage. And I don't know if you've seen his daughter, but woo, she's hot. David's like, okay, what's the third thing? Well, the third thing is, whoever takes Goliath out, that person's father's house will be exempt from all future taxes. All right. I see. So what does David do? Well, David gets motivated. We like to think that, you know, it was all for the Lord. Come on. David was human. There was a little bit of motivation here, right? And so what does David do? David goes for it, takes Goliath out. So what's the difference between these soldiers who are just standing there and David? Well, here's the difference. David's perspective of the problem, well, what did his do? He's asking the question, what could I gain here, right? What are the soldiers doing? They're going, man, what could I lose? They're at a standstill, because that's exactly what that question will do. What will I lose will always cause you to be inactive. It'll cause you to stand still. David starts asking a different, he's living out of this perspective of what could I gain, and that motivated him, and it moved him to action. So we repurpose this question, right? What could I lose? We start asking, what could I gain? What could I gain? I mean, imagine whatever scenario you're facing in your life right now, whether it's a step of faith that you have this opportunity to take, or this dream that you have about the future, maybe it's in a relationship, whatever it might be. Think about this. What if instead of being so preoccupied by your fear of what could be lost, you took more time? You begin to shift your thinking. You begin to imagine what could potentially be gained if it succeeds. Listen, I remember when my dad and I started this journey of transitioning and revitalizing this church. Most of you have no idea where this church was at just a matter of years ago. Man, this church was on the verge of shutting down and completely dying. And I remember as we started to contemplate and we started to talk about it, you know, we had no idea what was going to happen, but we certainly knew this could be very risky because, for one, you know, you understand people don't like change, do they? Right? People like the idea of change. Change looks sexy on paper, but when it requires you to change or me to change, whoa, time out. Right? Well, that's exactly what happened. We started making changes. Guess what? People start leaving. People stop giving. Man, we had those weekends or those weeks where we would sit down and we'd say, this could be our last weekend as a church. And we knew this thing could fail. But you know what we started saying? We said, you know what? All right, if it fails, first of all, if we keep going the way we're going, it's going to die anyway. So let's try this. Now, if it fails, at least we can say we tried. We'll feel better about that, right? But then we started thinking something more even. We started to imagine, well, what if it works? Right? What if it works? And all of a sudden, this tenacity started showing up in our hearts. We started getting less and less concerned about the people who were leaving and all the people who didn't like what we were doing, because we started saying, you know what? Well, man, what could be gained? Man, what lives could be impacted? What people could be reached? I mean, what could potentially the blessing that we could be to our city, to our community? And I'll tell you what happened, man. That question, that dream of what could be, man, it drove us and it motivated us to lay everything on the line and go for it. And man, what God has done. That's where some of you are at in your lives right now. Man, but you're so honed in on this question of what could I lose? Right? See, the question I have for you is really, it's just a matter of which question or what reality is more real to you. Is the image of what could be lost more real than the dream of what could be gained? See, that's why this thing that God has given us called imagination is so powerful. Man, that is a gift that God has given us. See, here, you see, listen, imagination, what it does is it allows us to dream and to begin to see what could be. Right? Our imagination is what paints that picture for us so that we can see beyond where we currently are. And so, you know, if the idea of what you could lose is greater than what you could gain, you're just not, you're shifting your imagination into the wrong place. You got to start dreaming. You got to start using your imagination. So what if you're a little bit wrong? Start somewhere. Start to imagine. Start to dream. Now, so imagine if your question, you were to shift this question, what could I lose to what could I gain? Would you ask that last one with me again, this question? What could I gain? I have two more. This one is so important for us as Christians. It's important for everybody, but especially for those of us who are Christians. It is this question that we get so, sometimes we have a tendency to get so focused on this, and that's the question, what is going wrong? What is going wrong? Listen, so many of us, we are conditioned to look for and to find and to point out and to focus on all the things that are broken, messed up, ugly, not going well, not going right. We're just focused. I mean, so much so that in the process, we actually miss out on what's going right. We miss out on what's beautiful, what's working. Now, of course, it doesn't help that we're surrounded by constant chatter that points out the negative, right? I mean, if you want to get depressed, turn on the news, right? I mean, if you want to get depressed, just listen to the chit-chat that goes on in your workplace, right? I mean, we're surrounded, so it's understandable because it's all around us, right? I mean, it's no wonder that so many of us, we immediately focus on our weaknesses instead of our strengths. That's where we immediately go there, right? We immediately go to what is problematic instead of what's possible. Right, we go to what's holding. We focus so much on what's holding us back instead of what could actually push us forward. Right, we focus on what is irritating the crap out of us with people and what drives us crazy and what we don't like and what's so bothersome way more than we focus on what's positive and admirable and beautiful about people. See, and then there's some people. And I'm sure no one in this room, just others that we know, right, who actually make this their identity, right? And so you call them on it. Man, why are you so negative, for God's sake? Well, you know, I'm just pessimist, kind of pessimistic. I'm just kind of a glass half empty kind of person. Is that right? Is that what you are? You are a pessimistic person. You are a pessimist, right? Huh? Is that right? I don't think so. No, friend, last time I checked, you are a human being, all right? You are a human being. You are not a pessimist. That is not who you are at the core. Stop telling yourself that. God did not create you as a pessimist. Do you understand that? God created you to see the good, to point out what's great, to celebrate and to identify with his creation, the good and the beautiful, not to walk around labeling yourself as some sort of pessimistic individual. That is not who you are at the core. Do not believe that, all right? In the same way that you've learned how, it's what's happened, is you've learned how to be pessimistic. Well, in the same way that you've learned how to be pessimistic, you can learn to be optimistic. And I wish you would hurry up, because no one really wants to be around you. So imagine shifting this question, what's going wrong, to this one, what's going right? See, that's why I love this value that we're celebrating this month, goodness and beauty. Man, this is an important value for us because what this value speaks of is about being the kind of people who are intentional about observing and affirming the goodness and beauty that is going on all around us, that where God is present in creation, in humanity, in culture. See, we're going to go out of our way. We're going to be people who we intentionally look for goodness and beauty. Now, is everything out there good and beautiful? Huh? No. Of course not. But I'll tell you what, we've already proven the point in church, the church world, Christians a lot of times have proven that it's very easy to identify what's going wrong with the world around us, right? We have no problem seeing that. It's easy to be cynical, right? It's easy to point out what is all the imperfections and the flaws of people, of society, and of culture. But here's the thing, what we believe is that Christians have a higher calling than that. We believe that Christians have a higher calling. You know what that higher calling is? It's a calling to seek out and to affirm what's right and what is good and what is beautiful in this world, which is not always obvious on the surface. So sometimes you have to dig a little bit. You got to spend some time. But I'll tell you what, you will find goodness and beauty in the darkest, most sinful, ugliest, broken places of this world. If you will just look for it, you will find it. It's there. Listen, imagine how reframing that question, imagine how that could change. I mean, some of you who are leaders, you've gotten stuck in a rut because you're so focused on what's where everybody's missing it and going wrong and how whether, you know, all their imperfections that you're not even aware of. You never point out what they're doing right. They don't like working for you. They just don't tell you that, but they don't like working for you. You know, people don't quit jobs. They quit bosses usually. I mean, how about in your marriage? Woo! Huh? Man, you're going to get like this in your ribs in just a second here. All right? I mean, look, listen, what would happen if, I mean, in your marriages, your relationships, instead of focusing always on what's wrong with the other person, man, imagine what would happen if you started being intentional about finding something good about them, something they're doing right. Huh? How about in your parenting? How easy is that, huh, with our kids to only speak up when they're doing something wrong, right? It's like, oh, you know, it's just not we don't want to have to, let's not try to fix what's not broken. Just leave it alone, right? No, listen. I mean, imagine sitting down to dinner, because dinner time can be one hell of a time, right, in our families, if you think about it. I mean, imagine sitting down at your dinner table, and instead of the typical conversations always starting, because how do they start out often? Well, I'll tell you what really sucked about my day. You know, and then your kid's like, yeah, I know, and this boy at school, he was like, you know, and then all of a sudden, like, dinner is depressing, right? Even if the food is good, right? So what would happen if, like, imagine if you were to be like, hey, and then just get up and walk away. No, I'm kidding. But you'd be like, hey, listen, let's do this, starting with you, hon. What's one thing that you want to celebrate that went well today? What's one thing? Go. That's how we start off our staff meetings. What are you celebrating right now? I mean, it'd be easy. We could sit down and be like, so what sucks with everybody right now?
Well, you know, got this email. It was like 4 pages long and not even broken up in paragraphs. And they used like Comic Sans font. It was horrible. Right? I mean, you know, people are so needy. Gosh. You know, well, and then you guys show up on the weekends and we're like, hey, we love you. Not.
Right? No, that's horrible, man. So we're going to celebrate. We're going to celebrate what's going right. So see, man, you start encouraging your family around the dinner table. You know what happened? Man, everyone becomes engaged. Dinner starts to become a high point instead of the low point of the day. I don't know how many of you remember this. I shared last year, I think I shared this like 6 months ago, but I started out last year, it was tough, man. Had some conflict. I just had some situations that were really, really weighing on me. And I remember I went one day to sit down with one of my mentors.
And, you know, I sat down and I started sharing with him. I just started sharing, man, how I was feeling, how drained I was feeling, how burned out, how upset and angry, and things were just triggering me like crazy. And so I just lay it all out. And this gentleman, he's an older guy, he kind of sits down, he's sitting in his chair, and he listens really well. And he just kind of looks at me and he says, "Scott, let me ask you a question. Where in all of this is the blessing?" The what? The blessing. I don't know. I can tell you where the BS is, but I don't know about no blessing. But you know what's interesting? Because when I started thinking about it differently, when I reframed the way I was thinking, man, it didn't take more than maybe a minute for me to discover not just one, but two, three, four blessings that were in fact emerging right in the midst of this really messy, stressful situation that I was facing. And I'll tell you what, my ability to deal with it, I was in such a better place because of that. I was able to see it from a different perspective. I was able to remove myself and be more of an observer of the situation than being so sucked into it. So this is a big one. We spend less time on focusing on what's going wrong. We start asking, what's going right? Ask that again with me. Ready? What's going right? Last one. I save the best one for the last one. This is an important one. This one can get us so stuck. You know what the question is? Who is against me? Who is against me? Let me tell you something. In the same way that it doesn't take a whole lot of effort to point out what's going wrong in the world, it also doesn't take much to find people who are against us. It doesn't take much. It does not take much to find people who are against whatever it is you're involved with, what you're part of. It's not hard to find the haters. It's not hard. Now, I'm going to tell you something, and you know this as well as I do. For some crazy reason, those negative voices are always the loudest. It's true, isn't it? Always the loudest. Man, it's like you can have 50 people who love you and are supporting you and are cheering you on and are encouraging you, and all it takes is one ugly, negative, nasty, passive-aggressive email, letter, phone call, gesture to completely throw you off. Listen, this is a hard one for a lot of us because we're consumed with thinking about what other people are thinking of us. I tell you what, as a pastor, it's been a tough one for me. I've had to learn how to navigate through this. I remember a couple years ago, there was this guy. He, and I don't know where he was from, but this guy had a podcast that he started. And what he would do is he would take my sermons, and he would take my sermons, and he would play a minute or so of one of my sermons completely out of context, and he would play one of my sermons, and then he would stop it, and he would give his, you know, because he was so anointed by God to know all truth in the universe, but he would take my sermons, and he would say, oh, and he'd play, and then he'd go, well, let's just pick this one apart. And I remember when I first heard about it, I was like, kind of like, stupid guy, you know. But then I started downloading his podcast. And so I would be driving home from work, and I'd be listening to this guy, and he would play pieces like where I would talk about my family and stuff, and he would say things about my children. Man, I started getting P.O.'d. I started getting so angry, man. Here's what happened. Man, it started building up in my mind. This guy started taking up so much of my brain space that I would get home, and you know, I'd be like hanging out with my kids, trying to have fun with them, you know, and all the whole time I'm thinking about this guy and his stupid podcast. And then I would take it out on them, and like I was, listen, it started to become my problem.
You know, and then I started to realize, you know what, man, I'm letting this guy in my space. Like, who is this guy? I mean, who is he anyway? I mean, this guy is like, I don't know, he's, you know, some moron who I don't know, probably lives in his mom's basement, for Pete's sake, and sits around in his robe all day eating Captain Crunch and making podcasts and criticizing people who are actually doing something. And by the way, I hope you're listening to this one. Dissect this one, baby. Is that clear enough for you? So, see, really the issue, the bigger problem wasn't this guy. The guy's probably unhappy, man. Who knows what his story is? You know what? They really started becoming my problem because I started getting consumed by this guy. I started focusing on him. And so now, you know what? So now... Whenever I find myself starting to get upset or agitated about criticism or about, you know, negativity or people who don't like what I'm doing or whatever, you know what I have to start doing right away is I have to start shifting my focus. And instead of being so honed in and asking this question, who's against me, I've got to shift it and I've got to ask this question, who is for me? Who is for me? Ask that with me right now, would you? Who is for me? Now let me just ask you a question. And I want those of you listening online, pastors, leaders, lame podcast guys, all of us sitting here, listen, have you been spending too much time being consumed with fear about what someone else is thinking about you? If you've been consumed by someone else's opinions or ideas or someone who doesn't like you, I'm going to challenge you to change this question. Start asking yourself a better question. Who is for me? Who is for me? Let me tell you this is the hard, cold facts here, all right? If you think the reason you're stuck is because someone else thinks bad of you or because someone's opinion of you or someone is against you and you say, well, that's why I'm stuck. No, you are completely wrong. Listen, it's not them that's keeping you from moving. It is you and you being consumed by what they think that's keeping you from moving. Because here's the deal. No one has that kind of power over you unless you give it to them. See, this question of like, who is for me? You know what that'll do? And that'll help you to stop empowering and giving out free rental space in your brain to people who are against you and who are criticizing you and are doubting you and judging you and pointing a finger at you. Listen, I love this one scripture in Romans chapter 8 where the Apostle Paul says these very simple words. In fact, let's read it together. Can we go ahead and put it up? Let's read this together. Ready? If God is for us, who can ever be against us? Now personalize that. Say me, okay? Ready? If God is for me, who can ever be against me? Listen, when you know that you have people around you who are for you, and when you know that there is a God who is for you and who promises to never, ever leave you, you know what that does? That fills you with courage. Man, that fills you and empowers you and enables you to stay out of that hamster wheel where you are just running around and around and around and you are completely stuck. Listen, I know it's not always easy. All right, I'm not standing up here telling you this as someone who has these things perfected. You understand that? I'm just being very honest with you, man. I've struggled with this stuff just as much as anyone. It is so easy to get stuck and to slip into small thinking and into dreaming small dreams. So easy. It is so easy to get stuck in this place where you're just playing it safe because of the questions that you're asking. But I believe that God can help us do better. I really do. And I think for a lot of us, it's as much as we would love it if God could Shazam us and make us this overnight, I don't think that's how it works. I think for most of us, what it means is we have to just be intentional about keeping the right questions in front of us. Just gotta be intentional. And it means we gotta be intentional about asking the right kind of questions, but then we also have to trust God. We've got to trust. It sounds kind of cliche. Well, I don't care what it sounds like, but it's true. We got to trust God that He will help us, that He will give us the grace to empower us, and He will give us the courage we need to repurpose the questions in our lives. He'll do it. And so I end by posing a very simple question to you. It's this one right here. Where in my life do I need to ask better questions? Where in my life? That is, the answer to that's going to be different for all of us. Where in my life do I need to ask better questions? In fact, let me put up all the questions for you to just look at and keep in front of you. If you missed one, you could write them down now. Take a picture, whatever. But I want you to look at those, and I want you to ask yourself that question. Where in my life do I need to ask better questions? All right, PCC, for some of us, you've gotten stuck because of the questions you're asking regarding all the things that you're lacking in your life, your resources, your money, your talent. And so you need to make a shift. You need to stop asking, what do I lack? You need to start asking, what do I have? Look at what is right in front of you. For others of you, it's moving from what can't I do to what can I do. You've been in deficit thinking way too long. For others of you, it's what could I, instead of what could I lose, start dreaming. Start using this imagination that God has given you so that you can have a dream of what you might gain. For others, what's going wrong, man? Get over here. Start to focus on what's going right. If you're critical about everything, if you're always complaining about everything, time to ask a new question. And lastly, who's against me? Let's be aware of the blessings and the people that God has put around our lives who is for us. And let's be aware that there's a God who is for you more than you are even for yourself. So where in my life do I need to ask better questions? Would you bow your heads with me? Let's take a moment. And let's pray just very simple prayer. Ask God to give us the courage to make these shifts. God, I think this topic is one of those that's such a great example of what you were talking about when you said that we need to take up our cross and follow you. We need to deny ourselves. I think it's a matter of waking up every day and saying, you know what? I'm going to live from the truth today. I'm going to live from out of the posture of who I really am, who God's really created me to be. And maybe I become convinced that I'm all these things or whatever, but today I'm choosing to see myself differently. So I'm going to ask a different set of questions. I'm going to ask a better set of questions. I'm going to ask some questions that have the potential to fill my heart with hope and to give me amazing dreams that, yeah, they might be scary, but they will always lead to significance. So, God, we offer ourselves to you, and my prayer is very simply that you give us courage to ask the right questions. Give us courage. We pray that, and we ask that in the name of the Father, of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. And everyone said, amen.